Hi, this is Mark Waid, writer of Daredevil, and you're listening to Longbox Heroes.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Longbox Heroes, episode 330. I'm Todd, and joined with Joe. How are we doing today, Joe?
I'm typing.
You are. You're like Mr. Heavy Fingers.
Mr. Heavy Fingers.
Yes, you are.
It's Mr. Ham Hands, because my hands smell like ham.
That's because you eat so much ham. Rum ham?
I wish. Oh. This was maybe like 2 weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
Are you aware of the stylized font that Run DMC's logo is in?
Yes.
Where it's the red line, the white letters in between, the red line at the bottom?
Mm-hmm.
That is a very much co-opted thing in the font. World of, you know, your popular culture, you go to your sites, you're like, it's like your parody shirt sites.
Mm-hmm.
Well, someone at the World Wrestling Entertainment UK tournament from a couple weeks ago who was sitting in the front row had a shirt that was done in that same font, but instead of saying Run DMC, it said Rum Ham.
That's fantastic.
And that's fantastic. And then I learned that it was a custom-made shirt that you can go to some site and they will make that shirt for you. And I never looked into the price.
Well, you should get two.
I should get two.
And
one for me to wear, and then one for me to what?
One to put in the jersey frame. For
the
wall.
Jersey frame, right.
That's right. It's funny that it's always Sunny didn't TM that, you know.
Well, I think if you're just like a local schmo who contacts like a t-shirt place and says, "Hey, make me a one-off of this shirt that only I am going to wear," like if that guy decided to mass produce that shirt.
Mm-hmm.
But I think Rum Ham is so vague.
Right.
You know, they can get away with it.
I actually think it means a pair of shoes in German. Rum Ham.
Okay.
I don't know. It might not. It might. I don't know what German words, that's what a German word sounds like in my head. No offense to all our German listeners.
All right. Like, if you had a shirt that said the Dennis System on it and spelled out the Dennis System, and then you sold that without the expressed written consent of the Fox Broadcasting System and the creators of It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia, I think then you might have a lawsuit on your hands.
Got ya. When we don't want those.
Right. I actually recently heard a story from a few years back where the Fox broadcast company, News Corp or whatever it was, sued another part of the Fox Broadcasting Company without realizing it was part of the Fox Broadcasting Company before taking legal action against them.
Ah. What were they selling? Counterfeit Cletus the football robots?
No. I think it was like something said like in a parody on a website maybe that was owned by News Corp.
Gotcha.
And then the remarks made it onto Fox News and therefore got the attention of Rupert Murdoch, who said, who is that website to say such things about my fine company? I'm going to sue them. And then in the lawsuit, it came out that they owned, through like one of their many chains of trees of everything that they owned that website.
So is Rupert Murdoch the Vince McMahon of broadcasters?
David Kincannon of Podvocacy made some sort of remark today about is the relationship between Roger Goodell and someone like that of the on-screen relationship of Vince McMahon and Stone Cold Steve Austin, and I couldn't respond because I don't know who the people he was talking about were.
Gotcha. I'll explain it off.
Parallels between the Brady Goodell relationship.
Yes, I will completely fill you in.
Which Brady sibling is he talking about? Is that Marcia Brady?
No, Tom Terrific, Captain America. Oh. The man who, when he retires from football, is going to cure cancer as he steps foot as for the first human on Mars. Like, at the same time.
Now, see, if that's how you're associating this Tom Brady, then that's probably now does Roger Goodell?
Yes, Roger.
Does he and Tom Brady get along? Are they friends?
No, they hate each other.
No.
Because Tom Brady deflated his balls.
Allegedly
to a PSI that was lower than regulation. And so Roger Goodell threw the book at him. And it was Deflategate for like a year and like over a year. And he might have to hand him the trophy. Oh, it's a beautiful thing.
Todd, this all sounds fake to me. Are we talking about football?
Yes, it's all a work, Joe.
It's all one of those gimmicks.
Yes.
All right.
We're already 5 minutes in and we haven't talked any comics.
Hey, you're not supposed to be watching the clock. Well, what do we have to talk about on the show this week, Todd?
Marvel announces a book coming out of one of their events.
Yeah.
DC announced a spinoff of a movie that hasn't happened yet.
All right.
Image announces reprinting a book for their anniversary.
I'm all about this.
And how? What order should you read comics in? Maybe something can help.
Could the rest of the show just be me laughing?
Sure, because I'm funny.
Oh yes, you're hilarious.
You're
a regular Murray.
I'm a Henny Youngman.
This is shameful. Who was the unknown comic?
The unknown comic. He was unknown. You can't say his name.
Oh yeah, you can. Murray Langston.
I think I'm more of a Henny Youngman. Take my wife, please.
Anywho, what else we got on the docket today?
Free digital books and sales.
All
Con
right.
News. I don't know what order. You got me all mixed up now. What we read last week, Monsters Unleashed number 1 and Killer Be Killed number 5. What we're looking forward to this week. I have a super huge week this week.
Mm-hmm.
And Todd and Leonard have issues. This week's issue is Superman versus Muhammad Ali.
Treasury edition.
Treasury, because I treasure my copy.
So let's get into the news. Mm-hmm. First, starting off with, let's talk about that movie news. We'll kind of bundle the Marvel news there together.
Oh,
so okay. We knew that The Rock, a.k.a. Dwayne Johnson, star of the upcoming Baywatch and Jumanji films.
I wish they'd mash those together.
Isn't your precious Karen Gillian in one of those films?
She's in the Jumanji, yes.
Right.
Can't wait to watch it.
She plays the board.
The dice.
Right, she plays the dice.
She goes for a tumble in the movie.
Right. So, there was supposed to be a Shazam movie on the DC schedule, and we knew that The Rock was involved in playing something. We didn't know for sure, but it certainly seemed like he was going to be playing Black Adam, the villain. Well, it has recently come out that they are going to be doing a separate Black Adam film starring just The Rock.
Which I think, I mean, Black Adam, The Rock is perfect for Black Adam.
I think at this point, the DC should just hand over their licensing of their films to WWE Studios.
Oh, stop it.
How much worse can it get, Todd?
What do you mean? You don't think The Rock would be a good Black Adam?
I think The Rock would be awesome in anything.
Right.
If you told me tomorrow that starting in the next set of films for Marvel that The Rock was going to be playing Iron Man, I'm like, I'm all about it. Let's go. Just take the armor out a little bit and we're good to go.
Mm-hmm.
I love The Rock. The Rock is awesome. But does the Black Adam character necessitate his own solo film?
Sure he does. Why not? I like his story. He's one of those characters who has a good story and, you know, he tumbles at the end and becomes the villain. I got no problem. It's like the Scorpion King. It's the prequel.
Listen, is that what they're just going to do? They're just going to take the Scorpion King and just kind of touch it up a little bit and say, no, this is a Shazam movie, we promise?
That's right. They're going to take the Scorpion King.
Oh, imagine if they did that.
It is going to be like, hey, I'm fighting scorpions, and they'll just put Shazam in there.
Right.
And then it's a CGI Black Adam, like Grand Moff Tarkin in Rogue One. It'll be perfect. It'll
that be would be
seamless.
You want to get people talking about your movie.
That's right.
If you're not going to give over the entire line, lock, stock, and banner to WWE Films,
mm-hmm.
just buy the Scorpion King and repurpose it as a Black Adam movie. Do a little digital trickery.
Yep.
First of all, imagine the money you're going to save.
That's right. And you get cheap Dwayne Johnson.
The film's going to turn a profit.
Mm-hmm.
Just because of the sheer amount of money you're not spending on it.
That's right.
Todd, this is a fantastic idea.
This is why I should be in Hollywood. And when they get to the Sandman movie, who do you think they should get to play Death from the WWE? Who's currently not working?
Will that person have already met that member of the Endless Family by the time they came around to that?
Oh, boy.
Hmm.
Oh, curious. You Pero.
So, I don't know. I'm not sure how I feel. Listen, I'm a Black Adam fan from, you know, the run on JSA and everything else from the Johns era from the early 2000s. So, I'm all about it. But, you know, commercial appeal. It's like, mm-hmm. hey, do you know Captain Marvel? Oh, you mean the blonde lady from the Marvel movies? No. Our Captain Marvel. Shazam. Well, first of all,
yes, it will be called.
Yeah, he has super strength. He can fly. He has a cape. That's Superman. No. He's a different guy. He's a little boy, and he gets struck by lightning, and then he becomes this. Yeah, I'm going to walk away now. No, wait. Hang on. You know his arch nemesis? The Worm? No. His other arch nemesis.
Dr. Savannah?
Dr. Savannah? No. His other arch nemesis.
That Nazi guy?
All right. He's got an evil doppelganger. Who is his exact opposite. His name is Black Adam. Okay. And he's played by Dwayne The Rock Johnson. Shouldn't he be like Samoan Adam then? That doesn't make any... Anyway. But hey, did you like the Scorpion King? Come here. Watch this.
Hey, this reminds me of the Scorpion King. It should.
Now, if only they cast Brendan Fraser as Shazam.
Oh my god! Then they could just... Oh my god. And then... I'm seeing this go is
right.
And Dr. Savannah could be the bald guy who was the mummy.
Oh boy. Now I'm out.
Now you're out?
I think the only mummy movie that I saw was The Scorpion King.
Oh my goodness. The first mummy movie is really good.
Let's not go crazy. I've been waiting. I said, listen, I like the mummy and all. I like Boris Karloff. Unless you get Tom Cruise in this movie, I'm not going to watch it.
Oh, that movie looks so good. Ugh. Don't worry, it's going to kick off a Universal Monster cinematic universe. So right. It'll all be. We need a Longbox Heroes cinematic universe.
We do. It's the soon-to-be-named network.
See, look at you getting plugs in.
Soon-to-be-named-network.com, soon-to-be-named-network.tumblr.com, Podvocacy, Puzzle Warriors 3, Profane Arguments, Prime Defective, Talking Gimmicks, Prodigal Sons Podcast, all of the shows, and maybe more in the near future. Soon-to-be-named-network.com, soon-to-be-named-network.tumblr.com. And hey, I did a little fancy thing with Tumblr that it tweets it out as well when new episodes go up.
Wow, I don't understand any of that, but I love it.
Yep. So let's move on in the news.
Okay.
So there's a big Image 25th anniversary celebration going on next month. Or in, like, a couple weeks or something. And one of the things that is going to be included in this 25th anniversary is the first time ever one of the original Image comics are going to be reprinted. And that is Splitting Image.
Mm-hmm.
The two-issue, I guess, series where Don Simpson and Jim Valentino kind of took the whole creation of Image to task, made some jokes about it, and had a lot of fun with the creators and everything that was involved with it. We actually talked about it on a show here a couple months ago, if I'm not mistaken.
See, I don't remember that, but yeah. Is this where they give all the creators a gentle ribbing?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
and they take it in the manner in which it was intended.
That's right. They don't have thin skin like some podcasters I know.
Right. And, right, the press release for it just says, "We thought the occasion of our 25th anniversary was as good a time as any to revisit our past with tongue firmly planted in cheek and sense of humor intact," said Jim Valentino, who did the art on this. "A piece of history at your fingertips. Now go wash your hands."
I wonder if splitting image is a play on spitting image.
Oh, I wonder if it is.
I wonder why they didn't call it spitting image. And then just have, like, the creators, like, you know, drawn spitting at things.
If I remember, it was because they split from Marvel.
Oh, so then it probably is a play on words.
Yes.
Maybe they could have spit at the Marvel logo. It would be maybe. Spitting image. I don't know.
It's been about 24 years since I've read this.
Mm-hmm.
And while I think I still have this in my collection, I probably will get this again.
So are you saying this could be an issue that's in Todd and Joe have issues?
Possibly.
Uh-oh. Put it on the list.
Look to sometime this late spring.
Mm.
It is forward. Two issues, though, but when they release it as an 80-page giant, that's going to be how we skirt the law.
Well, that's okay, because look at what I forgot how big the Treasury issue was.
Save it Superman. For later. Save it for later.
Yep. Uh-oh, I'm getting yelled at.
No, you're not getting yelled at. So, moving along in the news, and we're going to discuss the first issue of this a little bit later on in what we read from this past week, and it was announced that the current Monsters Unleashed miniseries is going to be turned into an ongoing series. Still with Cullen Bunn as the artist, and Dave Baldion is going to take over as the regular artist, because as I forgot about the Monsters Unleashed miniseries, each issue has a different artist.
Right.
And unfortunately, just the fact that this book exists is spoilers for everything that happens in the series.
What? I know, because you sent me the link and I was like, oh, there's going to be a Monster Unleashed book. I'm like, okay. So it could be anything, you know, It could be anything. Could be monsters that get off the leashes, whatever.
Right.
And I read the thing and I'm like, oh, so this is how all this ends. All right, got it. Because, you know, I read it to be informed for the show, and because usually we don't read, you know, stuff like that. But I was like, wow, okay, Monsters Unleashed has a, you know, a happy ending.
It's a something ending. I don't know.
I know. We'll I'm see. Just making that up. It's just, but that tells you everything you need to know about the ending of Monsters Unleashed, as far as I'm concerned.
Yes. So, the last bit of business, the last little bit that Marvel has coming out with the April solicitations, and the solicitations were a little late for some reason. I think it's because this is allegedly a 5-Wednesday month or something, or the holiday. I don't know. There's something.
I think it has to do with DC putting out their lenticular covers, screw everybody up.
Oh, that's right. So, Marvel is releasing a free-to-you... the consumer, the all new, all different Marvel reading chronology.
Mm-hmm.
So with Marvel consistently putting out new number ones and rebrandings of the same stories and everything else, this is going to be a primer of what order to read things in.
That's like very helpful.
It is helpful. But if they never change the numbering of things, we wouldn't be in this situation.
Then they wouldn't get new readers, because new readers want number ones. They don't want number 230s. They want 250s. Then they want a one again. Then 49 issues later, they want a 300.
Mm-hmm.
And then they want a one again. And then 49 issues later, they want a 350. And I could do this till we get to Detective 1000, but I'm not going to.
I'm torn on this, because This is definitely something that is needed.
Oh, it is, because I put my books away one time, and I'm like, well, I have a Hawkeye, and I have an all-new Hawkeye, and I have an all-new Hawkeye, and I don't know what order any of these... I have to look at the dates when I want to... I have to open it up and look at the inside page for the date that it was published, so I know whether I'm reading the right all-new Hawkman first.
And you could say the same thing about, you know, as Todd kind of threw some shade there on DC as well, but at least with DC currently, they have the date on the cover.
Mm-hmm.
So that does make things a little bit easier.
Yes, it does.
But then the flip side of things, as I mentioned, is if they didn't just relaunch everything every year and a half, or even sometimes every 6 months, with the same exact title and just a new number one and a different creative team, or sometimes the same creative team. And, like, it's not even, like, the beginning of a new storyline. It's just like, oh, here's the continuation of the plot threads we left off here. It's just we decided to take 3 months off and relaunch it with a new number one. It's not so much for people like us, the single issues readers, because that is confusing as well. But, you know, it's pointed out, like, let's say you're a trade paperback person.
Mm-hmm.
And we talked about Captain Marvel before, and you're like, hey, I hear there's a Captain Marvel movie coming out. What, the guy with the cape and the yellow lightning bolt on his thing? No, the girl one. And you go to, say, Amazon or Comixology or your local comic book shop and say, where do I begin? Well, there's currently 6 Volume 1 trade paperbacks for Captain Marvel.
Wow. Wow.
Right, so which one is the actual real first one?
That is crazy right there. Because I wouldn't even know. Like, going back, I mean, it goes all the way back to, like, Bendis' Avengers. Mm-hmm. Like, his Avengers and, like, this isn't new. I was helping the fancy gentleman sort out his collection one time. He just had it all in long boxes, different ways. And he's like, and I'm like, all right, well, here's Avengers books. And they just say Avengers, and they have Bendis' name on the cover as writer. And remember when they were rebooting that Avengers and New Avengers was new twice, and it was, this has been going on for 10 years, and I only hope it speeds up. I really hope they reboot every series after 6 issues. Just make it more confusing.
And you know what? And I'm okay with that. For us as the single issue people,
mm-hmm.
that's fine.
I know what you're saying.
But for the trade person, you need to put a volume 1 or a 2 or a 3 every time you relaunch something.
But that's what they put the volumes on, because it's that one, but volume 2, volume 3. Do you know what I mean? So you need to do volume 2, volume 1.
Right. Okay. I'll give you that too. Sure.
So that's when things start getting confusing too. You know, it's like, oh, I need volume 3, volume 4. But I just read volume 2, volume 3. Yeah.
And you know what? I'll even go you one better. You want to title it something different, whatever it is. DC, when they started reprinting a lot of their books,
mm-hmm.
they would put on the spine at the very bottom a little number. So when they're all on the shelf, you can see, like, there's 1, there's 2, there's 3, there's 4, there's 5, there's 6, and on. Do something like that.
Or at least with Iron Man's, like, when they would change the name, it was like, oh, the Irredeemable, what was it? There was the infamous, you know, there's infamous Iron Man now, and there's, like, at least I could, you know, tell the difference between some of them. But literally when they're, like, I'm using Hawkman. After, you know, the famous Hawk guy run, there was 2 all-new Hawkmen, Hawkeye.
Yes.
Books that were called the same thing. I think the only difference was one was hyphenated and one wasn't, or something like that.
Nope.
It's like, no, it was 2 all new Hawkeyes. How do I know? Do you know what I mean? Like, that's when it's crazy. Like you said, they're the same name. Captain Marvel has 6 ones, and there's got to be more. Ghost Rider, you know, and then you throw in miniseries, and that, you know, at least they'll probably have names on them, like Ghost Rider, you know, Vengeance of the Flame or whatever, some names or something. So, but yeah, I don't know. If I wasn't entrenched as deeply as I was, I could see how easily it could be to get lost.
Yes. So when this issue comes out, I'm sure we'll probably be doing a full, like, segment on this just to see if they actually get it right. How crazy would that be if they mess it up?
Well, if they go by their websites,
they'll
probably never get it wrong. I hear they're ironclad perfect every time.
But I'll even do that myself, where There was a time when I was lending out books or things were crossing over with other things that I would put a post-it note, mm-hmm. either like inside or on the bag, and you know, the bag, or mm-hmm. just like, we're not going to talk about it in full this week, but the Clone Conspiracy and Amazing Spider-Man issues that came out on the same day, like mm-hmm. obviously under normal circumstances, when stuff like that comes out, you read them in the order in which they're released. But when something comes out on the same day, that's when issues arise. And I luckily read Clone Conspiracy first, because there's a like 6 to 8 page part in Clone Conspiracy that is expanded on in Amazing Spider-Man that came out last week. So if I read Amazing Spider-Man first, I'm essentially reading out of context the middle of Clone Conspiracy.
Mm-hmm.
Where I read Clone Conspiracy first, read Amazing Spider-Man, I'm like, okay, this picks up from page 12. Now we're expanding on this a little bit more, and then that ends like 3 pages before the issue of Clone Conspiracy finishes.
I know what you're saying. It was kind of like that issue of Steve Rogers' Captain America that took place in the middle of
Civil War.
One of the Civil War II issues, and you were like, okay, which one of these do I like reinforce? That's why I used to like the little things in the front. It's like, hey, are you getting this book? You should, read this before this, and then go get that book too, which is like a good little advertisement that would make me maybe go buy another book if I didn't already. They need to bring that back.
I agree. Like the giant thing of stop before you read this issue.
Yes. Did you read blah, blah, blah issue?
Mm-hmm.
Go get that. Read that. Stop that and read that first and come back here.
Right.
They used to do that. They used to be fun. I miss stuff like that.
I miss a lot of things from comics, Todd.
Then it became a business.
Well, it didn't become a business until Vince tried to take over the territories. Is that what we say?
I think so. I'm not sure.
So speaking of taking over the territories, there's conventions this weekend, Todd.
Yay, conventions are back.
So the conventions that are going on this weekend are all in the South. You would think they're like, it's so surprising that in the southern states, or that during the winter months, they're having the conventions mostly in the southern states.
Oh, that's crazy talk.
So there is one in Orlando, the beautiful state of Florida, the Orlando Toy and Comic Con. That is your comic book centric one. Lots of artists are going to be there. Ethan Van Sciver, Ryan Stegman, Rob Gilroy, Ryan Ottley, amongst others. If you head over to the North Texas Comic Show, not a huge show, but 2 huge guests in George Perez and Marv Wolfman.
That's a big get.
Whereas the Southern Fried Pop Culture Show in Jackson, Tennessee is a little bit more of your media savvy one.
Mm-hmm.
That's where you can meet Rikishi, World Heard Wrestling Entertainment Hall of Famer.
Heard of him.
Brian Christopher, who you might know better as Grandmaster Sexay.
I know him too.
Right. And Sonny Schroyer.
Cher's husband?
No, you're going to say, I don't know who that is. No, Cher's husband is past, sir.
Oh, that is true.
Sonny Schroyer was Enos on Dukes of Hazzard.
He was also the coach in Forrest Gump.
No, he was only Enos and nothing else.
He was Bear Bryant in Forrest Gump.
Just like The Rock was only the Scorpion King.
That's right. Don't forget, he had a spinoff show too, Enos did.
He did?
Yeah, he had a spinoff of the Dukes of Hazzard. Enos went to Atlanta to be a big city cop. And brought his country's hometown ways to the big city. I'm serious.
A great fish out of water story there, huh?
That's right. You never saw that show? It lasted like a whole couple episodes.
And it was just called Enos.
That's right. What else would you call it?
Oh boy. How many episodes?
18.
Yeah, made it almost all the way.
And the last 2 episodes, because they 17 was called Pistol Packing Enos. And 18, the final episode was fondly known as Forever Blowing Bubbles.
And the plot synopsis for it says, an ancient Egyptian ruby. See, it ties into the Scorpion King. That's a prequel to this Black Adam film.
That's right. It was the thing that gave him his powers, I think. Gave Enos his powers, I mean.
Oh, boy. And it was an hour-long sitcom? Get out.
Oh, the only thing that was better was the Adventures of Sheriff Lobo.
That was
great. And that was the Lobo from the DC Comics, I think.
I'm surprised BJ they never did that, but...
What?
A book called Sheriff Lobo, starring Lobo from DC Comics.
I would buy that book.
And his sidekick, Enos' sidekick on the show, is an actor by the name of Samuel E. Wright.
Right.
Whose only other credit is Sebastian the Crab from Little Mermaid.
That's some cachet, though.
Right. That's money. Why do anything else after you're cashing that Disney check?
Oh, I thought you meant the Enos check.
Oh, come on.
That big Enos money is what you're living off of.
Oh, man.
I can't believe we did a few minutes on Enos.
Listen, you never know what gold we're going to mine from them thar hills when we're recording these shows.
That's right.
So there's a couple digital sales going on this week. Top Shelf is having a sale on a bunch of their stuff, creator-owned stuff and whatnot. Archie is having a sale on their entire line of comic books. And those are some good comic books. I highly recommend any of the Mark Waid stuff, of course. Check all that sort of stuff out. And what else do we have? Marvel is having a sale on a bunch of collections of Thor comics. And the Thor stuff that's in there is all of the Jason Aaron stuff. It looks like most of the major stuff. It does not appear as though the Walt Simonson stuff is in here, which is very, very odd.
Maybe they're just trying to move the new stuff because they have extra digital copies of those.
Yes. Now, the one thing that I will suggest that's included in this is across two trades is the Thor the Mighty Avenger run by Roger Langridge with art by Chris Somney. It was kind of like an all-ages sort of thing. Highly recommended.
Don't remember that, but okay.
Yeah, it was... Remember, I think they might have did like a Cap one as well. I know they did like a free comic book day one that bridged the Thor and the Cap ones.
Okay, I vaguely remember that. Okay, now.
Really good stuff. Up until then, the best Thor comics I had ever read.
Wow.
But I probably had not read any Thor comics before then.
I was waiting for the punchline to land. Mm-hmm.
I think it's all the same digital sales and freebies. Nothing new. Nothing has been added or changed to the list, I think.
No, I don't know. You would know on that.
Right, that's my job to know.
Oh. It's like you're getting paid. You do it so well.
Nope. Nothing new. Same ones that we have on the list there. So if you see the show notes, the ones we mentioned last week are still the same ones. So let's get into what we read from this past week, since I already did the plug for the network.
Okay.
Todd, I'll let you start with your book that you were most looking forward to coming out this past week.
Which was Kill or Be Killed by Ed Brubaker and Sean Phillips. The further adventures of Dylan, who may or may not be being pushed by a demon or an unearthly thing to kill people he deems, you know, worthy of killing. And at this point, he's gone on to take boxing lessons because the adventures he's gone on in the first couple issues did not end too well. And he needs to be able to defend himself. And meanwhile, his friendship with his friend Mason has gone south. And also his friendship with Kira, who he's in love with, I think, but, you know, has relations with. And now, that's all gone crazy. And that's one of the storylines in this that I find. I love that is so grounding in this crazy, like, mixed up story. Like, that's the... the believable hook that gets you in. And while all this is going on, we find out about his next victim, who is basically a guy who did a Ponzi scheme years ago, but is still out. You know, he's been out because they gave him a slap on the wrist. So he's working out how he finds his new victims and everything like that. And once again, I know we've said this before on the show, and we'll probably say it again, is Ed Brubaker knows how to write a book, and he knows what he's doing.
Right. They did things a little bit differently, where they told the middle of the story first.
Mm-hmm.
And built it up, and I thought the narrative of it was really good and how it took you along on this.
Right.
And then brought you right back to the end, and of course, here we are only 5 issues into the series, and it looks like Dylan has already made a huge mistake.
That's right, he's hinting at, this is kind of where I became a blip on the radar. And I'm like, okay, that's interesting, I want to see how this ends, like, because it's on a cliffhanger that you're like, okay, I don't know how that, you know, is going to be resolved, but it can't resolve well. And like I said, and I think the thing with Kira, like the thing with Kira that's going on, the soul crushing conversation in the diner, is like, he's like, I've pretty much ruined everything in my life. And I don't know. I just like it. I think I want to know where this demon thing is, whether it's in his head or if it's real, and how it pertains. I have a feeling it pertains to his father's art somehow. And I want to see where that goes, because every couple issues, or every once in a while, they bring up his father's, you know, dabbling in his career in doing erotic art for, like, comic magazines and stuff like that. And I'm like, I don't know. I know Ed has a plan, and I'm just willing to ride it out.
That is interesting to see that his father's art would come into it. Like, that would be a very interesting red herring.
Mm-hmm.
That it's just kind of thrown in there as kind of like a sidebar thing, and then that somehow ties everything together to a later point.
I think that's what's going to happen, but
I still think the demon is not real.
Really?
I think this is maybe not a Saint Elsewhere sort of thing. Like, he's definitely going out there and killing people.
Mm-hmm.
But I think maybe he got banged in the head, and whatever, maybe like post-concussion sort of something,
mm-hmm,
is causing him to see these things.
I'm wondering, like, I'm thinking if it's something psychological because of the father's artwork. Do you know what I mean?
Okay.
Like, you know what I mean? Like, I'm not saying, but that's what triggers the psychosis. Do you know what I mean? If it's something like that, if the demon's not real, maybe something terrible happened and he equates, I don't know. That art is coming into it somehow.
You know, we've been talking this episode about, like, kind of everything tying into itself and into each other, and, you know, in a joking fashion. But what if somehow something from the artwork ties into, like, Fatale?
That could be. I don't know if he'd want to cross it over, though.
Right. I don't think he would, because he never has.
Mm-hmm.
But he never has. Maybe this is the time that he decides to.
Right. The only thing he's ever done is, like, Criminal was on, like, ongoing minis. Like, it was like they all connect. But otherwise, maybe we'll find out that it's kind of like, you know, we always talk about Belzer from, like, the art in this is in all the comics throughout all of Brubaker's stuff.
That would be interesting.
That's right.
So yeah, either way, whatever we're talking about here, Kill or Be Killed is a great comic book.
And I love the way they'll put out issue 5 and the first trade of the first 4 issues at the same day.
Yes.
It's like, that's perfect marketing right there.
That's the Image way, man. They get that trade out the same day as the first issue of the next arc, and that first trade is always priced to move at like $9.99.
See, I don't know. They were a little late on reprinting Splitting Image.
That's true. Well, it was only 2 issues. There was nothing for it to tie into.
Well, what did it take? 24 years for them to get around to?
Something like that, yeah.
Oh, boy.
One time. So the other book that we're going to discuss, and I'm guessing you did not read Monsters Unleashed?
No, I did.
Oh, okay, you did. Okay.
I'm holding it in my hand. It was on my list of books, I'm pretty sure, from last week.
I can't keep track of everything, Todd.
All right, I'm just saying.
Monsters Unleashed, number one, written by Cullen Bunn, with art by Steve McNiven. A bunch of meteorites start hitting the world, and all these monsters, both from the 50s comics of Marvel and new, start attacking all over the world. Luckily, the entire Marvel universe is teeming, overflowing with superheroes. Obviously, there's a connection. What is that connection? Find out when Monsters Unleashed becomes an ongoing series this April.
Mm-hmm.
Or just read the solicitation text for a book that comes out in 3 months. Or we do get some clues in this, even if we didn't know that there was an ongoing series coming out about this. We are introduced to a young boy by the name of, and again, my pronunciation of this, Kei Kawade, who will have a superhero name of Kid Kaiju. He is somehow causing these monsters to arrive in the Marvel Universe.
Mm-hmm.
That part is unclear. But the prophecy of him has been foretold in the teachings of Elsa Bloodstone.
Yes.
World, from a line of world-famous monster hunters.
So there's a lot of monster things tying into this.
Yes, and I like monsters. I like big, giant monsters. I like destruction. I like stuff like this. It's an interesting concept. And for what this was, this is, you know, and obviously Marvel is getting the marketing team doing what they can to try to make this as big as an event as it possibly could be, but I think this probably will end up working best as just these five issues now leading into an ongoing series.
Yes, I agree. Reading this book, I really like this book. As you get towards the end, like the hook with like Kai, and like who he meets up with at the end, like the cliffhanger, it's like where monsters dwell or whatever. And I'm like, okay, that's really cool. I thought some of the execution early on, because it was basically like, oh, well, here's our team fighting these monsters in this city, and here's our team fighting monsters in this city. Other than the Avengers, which gets a little more play, you see the X-Men and you see the Guardians of the Galaxy and everything. And I thought, yeah, it was them fighting big monsters, but it was the same thing over and over again. I would have liked them maybe to stick with one team and explain that there was more monsters all over the world. But when we got to the end, that's really what makes me want to stay with the book, because I want to see where all that goes. And I don't know. I just thought it was a little poorly executed in the beginning, but it got me at the end.
Right, because again, the, I don't want to say crowbarring in of the rest of the Marvel Universe, but I just did.
Yes. It just seemed repetitive. Do you know what I mean? I don't know where.
But it was a nice looking book.
Yes, it was.
You know, Cullen Bunn is the writer on this. He'll be the writer on the ongoing. The artist of the next issue is Greg Land. And the next issue after that is going to be Francis Lennell Yule.
Mm-hmm.
And I know I'm butchering that pronunciation.
I couldn't think of the book that I wanted to think of. The ending reminded me of Where the Wild Things Are. That's all I could think of.
Oh, okay.
When I read the last couple pages.
Never read that.
You should maybe get it for your kid. He might like it.
Nah.
He likes Wild Things and Where They Are.
He likes the song Wild Thing, but only the Sam Kennison version.
That is a good version. I was watching The Married with Children, where he shows up as the angel at Christmas the other day. For Al Bundy, you know, It's a Wonderful Life, the Al Bundy story.
Oh, yeah.
Great episode.
First appearance of Ted McGinley on the series.
Yes, but he wasn't Mr. Darcy at that point.
That's right.
People forget. They think, you know, oh, then, nope.
But just on the show as a handsome man.
He is a handsome man.
He is a handsome man.
That's right. Gets a lot of flack when he shouldn't.
So, again, it was a light week of stuff that we read from this past week. So let's get into what we're looking forward to coming out this week. If you head over to longboxheroes.com, every Tuesday around 5:30 Eastern Standard Time or so, we put up the pull post, which is a link to all of the books that are coming out this week, whether you get your books in print, whether you get them digitally. whether you get them sent to your house, however it is that you get your books, be forewarned, be forearmed, don't miss out something, and especially when these renumberings and reading orders and all sorts of jazz like that, boy howdy. So, in addition to attempting to guess what the other is most looking forward to coming out this week, we are also keeping a running tally of not only what books we are getting from each publisher on a rolling weekly basis, but also how many books we have purchased so far into the calendar year 2017. Todd, how do you have so many books?
I like to read. My eyes like to see comics.
Gotcha.
It's a lot of books, man.
You get a lot of books.
I do.
More power to you.
So I guess I have to pick yours now, right?
That's correct.
I'm looking at yours, and is it Saga 42?
It is Saga number 42.
Mm-hmm. Easy pick.
Now, the question I have for you, sir,
mm-hmm.
is Justice League vs. Suicide Squad number 6 the last issue of the series?
It is the last issue of the miniseries.
I am going to guess that's the book that you're most looking forward to coming out this week.
No, it is not.
Oh, come on.
It is also Saga this week.
I wanted to go for a little something different.
I figured as much, but no, this week we're back to usual. It was only, I forget what came out that week, where it threw Saga off. It got you, but now I'm back.
It was the Captain Atom book.
Right, yes, which was just like a fluke thingy that I hadn't seen good. Oh, hey, howdy, as you always say. Stealing your catchphrase.
Right.
I'm catching your catchphrase for you.
Oh, they have a shot you could take for that.
Oh, do they? Malibu?
Oh, yeah, it's a shot of monkey milk.
Oh, my goodness.
So there's that, of course, while you're over at longboxheroes.com. Be sure to check out all the past stuff that we have there, whether it be past pull post, just in case you missed a week at your local comic book shop, and don't be that person. Let that pull pile get too big.
Mm-hmm.
Past episodes of this show, past episodes of Longbox Heroes After Dark, everything that Todd and I are up to, the growing collection of Todd and Joe Have Issues. But also, while you're over there, be sure to click on our little store button there, where you could buy shirts and or stickers. Todd met someone this weekend who not only purchased our sticker, but had it on their phone.
I was like, wow. So anytime you're talking to someone, someone could see Longbox Heroes right there. That's mm-hmm. fantastic.
That's a fan. And I doff my cap to you, and I'm not even wearing a hat right now. It's too late.
That's right. And I don't even know what a doffing is.
Right. It's like going like this.
Gotcha. I saw that on radio.
Right. And lastly, while you're over at longboxheroes.com, be sure to click on our Amazon link across the top of the page if you're looking to buy anything for yourself, your loved one, or whomever it may be. Valentine's Day is coming up.
Ooh-ho-ho.
Why buy your loved one chocolates and or flowers, which I'm sure you can get through Amazon in some way, shape, or form, be like the people this past week who purchased through our Amazon link TurboTax software.
That's a Valentine's Day gift.
And a Funko Pop Beauty and the Beast Peasant Belle figurine.
Wow.
I've got that narrowed down to one of two people that could have purchased that based on some Twitter conversations I saw the other day.
Are you sure it wasn't the crab from Mermaid Under the Sea?
Now, if they made Dukes of Hazzard Funko Pops.
Oh, Enos fighting Black Adam.
Right.
With that ancient Egyptian ruby. Oh, it writes itself. What if we just spliced in Enos from the TV show in The Scorpion King?
All right.
Just why not? It would be the perfect story.
If you're in the greater Tennessee area this weekend and you're going to the Southern Fried Comic Pop Con or whatever, see if you can get the signature of who's the actor's name again here? Sonny Schroyer. See if you can get him to sign off on us using his image in our Black Adam Scorpion King sequel prequel remake thing.
Mashup.
Right, mashup. Homage.
Oh, we should get Mash in there too.
Right. No, there you just well, I think we can I think we can get Jamie Farr for a song and a dance.
Oh, the best by far. That's what his marathon on me.
Oh, I'm well aware.
I love that joke.
I know you do.
I think I've done it to you 9 times now.
So, thank you to everyone who purchased anything through the Amazon link this past week. Of course, every little bit helps. Everything makes us happy. We're not going to tell you about server costs or anything else like that. It just makes us happy to see people buying stuff and us getting a couple bucks in the back end.
Server? That you mean like a waiter at our steak on steak dinner?
Yes.
Okay.
Gonna have the steak mailed to me.
I can buy it through Amazon.
I'm actually mailing a box of beef jerky tomorrow.
Oh, are you?
I certainly am.
Longbox Heroes beef jerky?
No, I wish. We should have our own brand of beef jerky.
Todd flavor and Joe flavor.
Why is there so much hair?
This one's clogging my heart. It must be the Todd.
Oh, it's pieces of his actual heart.
That's right.
Anyway, was there any Todd's art attack this week?
No, there wasn't.
Oh,
that
boy.
I noticed. I'll look again, but I don't think so.
You know, I could...
What?
Well, no, I'm not going to do that.
What?
I could start scanning the drawings of monster trucks that my kid does for me every week.
Oh, my God, that would be fantastic. I wonder how Gravedigger's driver's doing.
I looked that up after we recorded last week. He's doing fine. He's not driving for the tour currently, but he's all right. They got one of the other members of the Anderson family, I don't mean Arn Anderson, to take his place. But we're less than a month away from us going to see Monster Jam up at the arena here.
We are? We're going?
Not you. Me, the royal we, my family.
Oh, I thought this was a sponsored show outing.
No.
You know, right? You sign me out and we go somewhere.
Nice. You're the Roughhouse Fargo of the show. And again, that's a joke for me.
Okay.
Write that down. I'll explain it to you later.
What did you say? Wells Fargo?
Roughhouse Fargo.
Okay, that said Wells Fargo,
oh,
the bank.
Oh, my goodness. So, Twitter, of course, Longbox Heroes. Todd is at Roker the Joker. I am at Joe Sposto, soon to be named Network. All the people, anytime a new show goes up and it goes up on the website, of course, it also goes out on the Twitter as well. And I'll probably be tweeting a whole bunch of Royal Rumble stuff this Sunday. So batten down the hatches or put me on mute, whatever you want to do. The choice is yours.
I might have to take you off my notifications this weekend.
Katie, bar the door, as they say.
Maybe I'll watch the Regal Ruckus. Who knows?
I might send you a message when to tune in.
Uh-oh.
Yeah.
I gotcha.
Sometimes these... Royal Rumble starts at 5 o'clock Eastern time this weekend.
Does it really?
Oh, boy.
What is it, like the Super Bowl? Jeesh.
That's what they're making these the big four pay-per-views. Your Royal Rumbles, your Survivor Series, your SummerSlams, and your WrestleManias. I remember for WrestleMania 2000, in the year 2000, it was WrestleMania all day.
Oh, boy.
It was 24 hours of WrestleMania. They did, like, you know, the show, of course, and then they did, like, an hour wrap-up afterwards. But the rest of that time, the other 19 hours, was a full day of wrestling. Even I was just checking in periodically.
I wonder how they kept everybody awake all that time at the wrestling places.
It was if it was WrestleMania 1986, I could tell you. WrestleMania 2000, I think it was just a lot of YJ Stinger.
Oh, okay.
Write that down too.
YJ. Well, I'll put it next to Roughhousey and Fargo.
Right. Right.
Y2J Stinger.
And also, before we get into Todd and Joe have issues. This week on After Dark, we announce what the other has to watch for next week's first installment of the Gallifreybirds.
Freebirds, whatever, it doesn't
right,
matter.
Right, Gallifreybirds, which is, I make Todd watch something in the history of wrestling, and Todd makes me watch something from the history of Doctor Who, and the following week we talk about it on After Dark. It's the one time on the schedule where After Dark is preempted by Gallifrey Birds, Roman numeral 1.
La, la, la.
So let's get into Todd and Joe have issues, sir.
Okay.
Superman versus Muhammad Ali, published a long time ago.
Yes. I think it was 77 or 78, maybe?
I think 78. Let me look this up here. Dead air works on the show.
Well, hey, that's what it does, you know?
78.
Ooh. It says 72 pages.
For $2.50.
Yes, you can't even get that now.
Now, we could just spend all day looking at the cover. Mm-hmm. And going over the who's who of celebrities on that cover gatefold.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a mess. There's a lot of people on that cover.
In the copy you read, did it have the, because I have the actual Treasury edition here.
Okay.
Which I read, which has the graph in the inside and shows you all the names.
This does as well, yes.
Cool beans. There's a lot of people, DC and actual, like, celebrities at the time. So, you could just spend, like you said, you could spend an hour talking about, like, each and every one.
I do like, as a fan of it at the time, I do like both Alfred E. Newman and William Gaines on the cover.
Well, you gotta have them. You have Jimmy Carter there.
I will say it's very good likenesses of all these folks.
They are, and inside, there's some great likenesses, too. Howard Cosell shows up for a second. All his trainer buddies mm-hmm. for Muhammad Ali. Muhammad Ali looks great. As a matter of fact, this is probably, like, you know, I have my favorite artists. I have this and I have that. To me, this is one of the best, if not the best looking books I have ever read. Like, Neil Adams lays it all on the page, and it makes me wonder if he knew, like, what he could get away with because it was Treasury sized edition. Like, just there's an opening shot of, like, where they're looking for they hear Muhammad Ali somewhere, like, you know, in the inner city, and they go, and just that 2-page spread, I'm like, what did that take, like, a year to draw? Like, my God, that's beautiful. And there's 3 or 4 moments in there that I would kill everyone I know to get the original art for.
Wow.
There's that 2-page spread of the city. There's Superman on the stretcher, knocked out. There is one of my favorite scenes. Right, I'll go right to the end where Superman and Muhammad Ali shake hands. But the scene where, and I'm sorry, I get jazzed up for this issue.
Right.
It is where the guy who's the green fat version of Ra's al Ghul.
Right.
Tells him, you're famous for your predictions, Muhammad Ali. I need one of your predictions on when Hunya is going to fall. And he goes off. And I don't know if Denny O'Neill called up Muhammad Ali and said, I need some stuff to put into word balloons. But it was all stuff that I could imagine coming out of Muhammad Ali's mouth, and he goes on, the universe is going to know me as terrible. And I'm like, he's just going on. That 2-page thing is, I don't know how to explain how awesome that is. Maybe one of my top 5 favorite scenes in comics ever.
So Todd, you like this book a lot. Tell everyone what this book is about.
Basically, aliens come to Earth because they feel that they're a threat. The human race is a threat. And the guy decides to make Superman and Muhammad Ali fight for Earth's, like, if they lose, they die. If they win, everything's okay. But he's really got a, you know, an agenda and everything like that. So Muhammad Ali and Superman have to like train and fight to see who's going to fight the champion of this guy. And it's an intergalactic event, like boxing matches were back then, like on Earth. Like I think this sums up what boxing was in its heyday, you know, in a story, also while you have a superhero angle, and it's fantastic. I don't know if I explained it well. I got excited in the middle.
You did explain it very well. So I was very unfamiliar with what the crux of this story was, but it's very much a story of its time. And by that I mean it does have a timeless look to it, only because of the Neil Adams art.
Right.
But the dialogue really dates this.
Of course
it does. Comic from the 70s.
But it's everything Muhammad Ali is, though. But anyway, go ahead. I'll let you go because I
rambled. Well, no. Not even just Muhammad Ali, but just like the way that everything is, like, you've got your narrative, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, you got your yellow block narration and stuff. But every time someone is doing something, they're explaining what they're doing.
Got ya.
Which is a very old trope in comic books.
Right.
Which is fine, you know, but I think they've gone so far away from that. I haven't read an old comic book in a very long time. So it took me a little while to kind of get back into the groove of like, oh, okay, this is how comic books used to be written.
Right. But I think there is a lot of that. But where it shines is, I think it, I don't know if it's just me because I read it a long time ago and I get excited, but the fighting scenes and Jimmy Olsen, like, between Denny O'Neil and Neil Adams, they managed to make me feel like I was watching a boxing match in illustrations. Do you know what I mean? Like, a physical thing that you should be watching on film or in person, they really translated well into comic book format. I mean, some of the shots were like they show Muhammad Ali hitting Superman and his like back is arching backwards. I'm like, this looks fantastic. And I feel like it kept getting like spiced up and with like the punch with the writing talking about how like Muhammad Ali is giving Hunya, who, by the way, is one of the greatest, you know, villains of all time, you know, like just the rope-a-dope and everything. I don't know. Also, I'm, you know, there's not many, you know, things that I like. I like Doom cruise ships and I like Muhammad Ali, you know, just there's I was a big Muhammad Ali fan. So I think he's one of the greatest, you know, athletes who have ever lived. So I'm a sucker for this kind of stuff.
I liked it, but again, it just, because it's an old comic book, I kind of kept falling into some old tropes, but it is a beautiful comic, a comic I would recommend to someone if you've never read it.
Right.
This is obviously pre-Crisis Superman, where he could pretty much do anything. Unless he's under a red sun.
Which I forgot, that's how they get to box.
Uh-huh.
That they go under a red sun, so Superman has no powers. Sorry, go ahead.
And I attempted to do digging online, and you know how you had mentioned before, like obviously they got the okay from Muhammad Ali and his camp and everything else like that to actually make this book happen.
Mm-hmm.
But so much of the dialogue, as you mentioned, seems, and again, I jokingly say this, but from Muhammad Ali promos.
Right.
Whereas, did they say, like, hey, Muhammad Ali, we need a couple words of wisdom from you? Or did they just take stuff from, like, maybe, like, interviews and stuff that he had been given, that he had given before? Or, like, how did they come to the decisions made for his dialogue?
I would love to see us, like, in, like, I don't know if maybe the new hardcover that, Neil Adams recolored and everything like that has any of the story in the back, but I would like to know more about, like, if I ever met Denny O'Neil, that's what I would be asking.
Right.
And now, did you read The classic version, because I read my Treasury edition. Did you read the new colored version?
No, I read the old timey version.
Good, because as much as I like Neil Adams and he is a genius, it doesn't look as good all recolored. It does not. I've flipped through the new hardcover and I'm like, nope, give me that newsprint. Like, that's what this was made to be on. And it really doesn't work for me. And you know the best way to describe Muhammad Ali in this? And I want to know who ripped off who, but all I could think of Muhammad Ali is like him doing Benjamin Grimm, like, I'm not going to fall, and all the smack talk and everything. And I'm wondering if, you know, when, because he started boxing right around the time Fantastic Four 1 came out, and they talked about how immediately he was stealing some wrestler named Gorgeous George or something like that. Like, he had met him in Vegas and he was like started stealing his shtick to upset fans, and fans, you know, didn't like him for some of the things that he said, but he went on to be, you know, the prototype athlete, famous athlete.
Well, and this is where we kind of get into a little bit of like what I can kind of talk on. You know, there's rumors out there that it was Gorgeous George. There's rumors out there that it was Buddy Rogers. There's rumors out there that it was Freddie Blassie. And at the end of the day, I think when it's all said and done, the tracing of it could be back to being Freddie Blassie.
Okay.
You know, like, he took a little bit from here and a little bit from there. But the thing is, he took from Freddie Blassie, and then conversely, so much of professional wrestling took from Ali.
Right.
You know, everyone from superstar Billy Graham to Dusty Rhodes to, you know, everybody. Like, who was wrestling in the mid to late 70s stole so much of their shtick, their cadence, the, you know, everything from Muhammad Ali.
Right. Because it says here, I'm looking at an interview, like, not like somebody excerpts from an interview, said that Ali stated in a 1969 interview that he met with Gorgeous George in Las Vegas in 61, and that the wrestler inspired him to use wrestling jargon when he did interviews. Well, maybe that means he watched, you know what I mean?
Right.
People and did it. And he was polarizing. That's the one thing I love about Muhammad Ali. And he was amazing. I've never seen anybody, and I know we joke that boxing's a work and all that stuff that you do, but I know it had its problems, but I've never seen a man move backwards and throw a punch and knock somebody for a loop. Like, in all the years that I used to watch boxing, obviously I wasn't watching his fights at the time. I went back and watched them on DVD and stuff like that. But just, I don't know. I go on and on. It's just that he was amazing. Everything that he did, he changed what, you know, like you said, the way an athlete is looked at, the way they act, and people just steal, like you said, steal his shtick left and right now. But he was the prototype as far as I was concerned.
Ironic you say that. John Cena's original name in professional wrestling was the prototype.
Was he? So yes. He probably stole that from Ali.
Probably. But this was a good book. Like I said, not a great book. I wasn't blown away with it. But I don't have the same affinity toward Muhammad Ali like you do.
True.
I respect him, but I was, like, my boxing era was like that little window of Mike Tyson.
Yes. I was watching boxing, and you know what? They should have did, like, I don't know, like Supreme versus Mike Tyson at the time.
There you go.
That would have been perfect.
Lobo versus Mike Tyson.
Yes. Oh, my good. Now, who can we get to go against Conor McGregor now? Because MMA is... Oh, is what boy. The big thing is. Who would fight Conor McGregor in a comic now?
Is there someone who's involved with comics who has a mixed martial arts background? No one that I can think of any note or worth.
Okay. You know, but...
Go on.
No, I'm not going down that road.
Come on.
How come Muhammad Ali never fought Wildcat, the boxer in comics?
Now, see, I would have thought that Wildcat, since he's been, you know, he's an older gentleman, he's been around for a long time, maybe he would have boxed, like, Smoke and Joe Frazier, maybe, a young George Foreman.
Jack Johnson,
Jerry Cooney,
right?
Because that was my boxers. Favorite.
Remember when JSA Classified was an ongoing? Yes. And they would have these little, like, they were just like, I always, file stories is what I always call them. They would just be like, oh, we're going to do a miniseries about Jesse. And they had six Wildcat stories over the course of 60 issues, and each one was boxing related somehow. It was always like, oh, this crime gang only strikes when boxing matches are going on. Well, I should infiltrate the boxing league and, as, you know, Ted Grant and take care of this. And then, like, it was like, oh, well, these criminals are beating people up like boxers, so I should go out and find... It was always, like, boxing-related crimes with him every time. So I would have liked to see him fight Muhammad Ali.
He was very one-note, I guess.
Yes, he was.
That's a shame.
Yeah. But anyway.
All right. So anything else that we need to discuss? Anything else we need to cover, or did we get everything?
Do we have next week's issue?
We do have next week's issue.
That's the only thing we have to uncover right now.
All
right.
So you picked last week's, and I picked this week's. This week's is an issue that I wrote about as one of the very first things at the launch of longboxheroes.com.
Oh, my goodness.
One of my favorite single-issue stories of all time, and one of my favorite Daredevil stories of all time, written by Carl Kessel with art by Kerry Nord. It is Daredevil number 360.
Kerry Nord from Conan fame?
This is before Conan.
No, he's always going to be my Conan artist. But yeah, wow. I didn't know he went back that far.
Yep. This is during the Heroes Reborn time, where the major heroes are shunted off to that little spherical universe that Franklin Richards created.
Yes.
And, you know, while there's very few heroes left, a lot of the big baddies are left in town, and this is a solo fight of Daredevil taking on the Absorbing Man.
A la when he fought Juggernaut.
Spider-Man. And...
No, didn't Daredevil fight Juggernaut, too?
He very well could have, but there's a very famous story.
Oh, yeah. Right. And I think they ripped that off, like, the Daredevil. And there's a Daredevil Hulk story, too. A famous one. They're all the same story. It doesn't matter. I'm just kidding. I can't wait to read a Daredevil. Wait a minute. Issue 350. What year was this?
360. This was 1996.
How could that be?
Come on now.
Mark Waid didn't create him until a few years ago.
This is wibbly wobbly timey wimey stuff.
That makes sense. So, all right, I'm interested in reading this issue. I haven't read a lot of Daredevil other than Mark Waid stuff and a few other random issues here and there, so this should be interesting.
This is, I think, when the Mark Waid run on Daredevil wrapped up, we had discussed it on this show, and obviously you having, you know, very limited exposure to Daredevil, I rank this Carl Kessel, Kerry Nord run in the top three of my all-time favorite Daredevil runs.
Wow.
It's really good. Even though, like, right, you know, like, allusions to, like, very time-specific storylines kind of dated a little bit, but without that sort of stuff in there, this would be something that if it was published today, I think would be, like, one of those critically acclaimed books.
Okay, I got you.
Yes.
All right, then I guess, is that it then?
Now I think that's everything.
Yeah.
And I guess this is going to close out episode 330 of Long Box Heroes. For Todd, this is Joe, and we will see you all here next week.
Remember, be a faucet, not a drain.
Boo!